And Ethan will come for us all.
Hello, I'm Montana.
And I'm Samantha.
And you're listening to
Reaper Tales.
And we did it this time.
We did it. And today I'm going to tell Montana about Lou Wooster. But before I get into the story, Montana, what are we drinking or not drinking?
God, I'm not drinking that. We just recorded the episode that's going to come out the week before this. So I still have that cocktail left over because I didn't drink much of it. But since this person that Samantha's covering is apparently she helped with the cholera outbreak in Birmingham.
Right.
At some point, we decided to steal a recipe from This Podcast Will Kill You because they covered cholera on like their fourth episode.
Four. Yeah.
So we're just going to steal their drink. That episode is called The Poop Show. By the way, if anybody wants to go, it's a really good episode. I love This Podcast Will Kill You.
That's my favorite. It's the only one I've listened to every single episode.
Truly. I listen to the prion one like multiple times a year because I am obsessed with prion disease. Just because like anybody can have it and it's dormant and then it activates one day and then you're fucking dead. But you become like crazy zombie-ish or you just don't sleep anymore and then you die of like... Sorry, I didn't mean to get into prion disease. Anyways, they made a drink called rice water stool, which sounds delicious, right?
Just wait till you hear the ingredients and instructions.
Yeah, so it's 3 ounces of chai tea. It's good so far. Doing good so far. 1.5 ounces of rum chata and 0.5 ounces of whiskey. Doesn't sound too bad, but it has to be body temperature, so it can't be hot or cold. It has to be tepid, and it says warm to body temperature and try not to gag. So yeah,
good luck. I'm not drinking that.
If you're adventurous enough to try that, go for it.
Here's your reminder to drink water, you thirsty bitches.
Yeah,
that's what I'm doing.
Do that. So if you're adventurous enough to try it, let us know. I am not. I have to work tomorrow, so I'm gonna stick with the one
cocktail. You get out of work if you drink that.
Yeah, truly. So, tell us about Wooster. Let's do it.
Yeah, I plan on it. So there's a lot of information. This is going to be a very different story from the one that we shared last week. Let me just tell you. The one last week, we mentioned imposter syndrome a number of times. You probably could have had a little bit of a mini drinking game with it. This one, I don't think she suffered from that at all. So it's going to be a different story.
Good for
her. It didn't seem like it.
I love a confident bitch.
Yeah, it seems like she had the confidence. Kind of impressive, to be honest. That being said, her story, she wrote an autobiography, FYI. And so a lot of the stuff comes from her autobiography, but it kind of is hard to tell fact from fiction or what might be exaggerated. So I'm just going to share the story as what I could find, and I'm going to let you be the judge of what parts seem more fact, which parts seem more fiction, maybe exaggerated.
I got to be honest. Like, I love an autobiography because I can get it from the horse's mouth, so to speak. But at the same time, something about somebody writing an autobiography seems so self-centered. I don't know what it is. Like, I have that dislike of it. I'm like, oh God, they just think so highly of themselves. They had to write a whole book about it. It's like people who Google themselves. I don't know what's wrong with me.
Well, I can see that, but I also think that if you take it into the context of a woman from the late 1800s, how many people were probably going to write about her? And also, when I tell you a little bit more about her and her background and where she came from, it also kind of makes sense. You probably wouldn't have heard too many people trying to tell her story.
I'm here for it. I do love a good biography, though.
That's why I say, you could go either way on some of these stories, but there are a few substantiated things. So we'll get into it.
She might have been like a great woman or something. Like, was she a great woman?
From all I could read and hear about her, yes.
Yeah, probably was a great woman. I have no reason to be prejudiced against her writing, like, her own autobiography, like, an autobiography. It's just, like, something is mentally unwell with me, and that's one of them, outside of imposter syndrome. Drink.
Maybe just a deep sense of suspicion when it comes to people telling their own stories.
Truly. Okay, we'll go with all right. That.
All right. So Miss Lou was born in Tuscaloosa on June 12th, 1842. She died at the age of 71, just a month before her 72nd birthday on May 16th, 1913 in Birmingham, Alabama. It was kind of funny the way that you worded the episode that we just recorded before this one, because I had kind of a similar situation. But she was the fifth youngest of eight daughters. And as far as I could see, they were only girls. They didn't have any boys, oddly enough.
People had so many kids back then.
I know. Well, they had to have spares.
I know. They didn't all survive. They needed, like, labor work and all of that stuff.
Yeah. And the other thing, oddly, about her family, for the most part, they all lived. So that was a big household to be keeping running and a lot of mouths to feed.
Wow.
Her father was William Wooster and her mother was Mary Chisholm. William was an engineer from New York, from all that we could figure out, and her mother was from South Carolina. William Wooster died in 1851 while the family was living in Mobile, leaving Mary to raise their remaining seven children on her own, because one had passed. Quick caveat here. To remind you that in 1851, women in the U.S. had very few rights that would have been required to raise and support their children all on their own. The timeline for how women's rights have changed and some pivotal moments in history, according to yourdream.liveyourdream.org, I have a list of things, and I'll pause when we get to the year of would have been right before this time period, but I also want to go through some of the ones after it. So, well, the first one, we're going to start it off with a bang. In 1777, all states passed laws taking away the women's right to vote.
Starting off strong.
Yep. It'll be more positive, mostly, going forward. 1833, Oberlin College. So 1833, Oberlin College is founded as the first co-educational institute that accepts women and African Americans. 1848, at Seneca Falls, 300 women and men signed the Declaration of Sentiments, a plea for the end of discrimination against women. In this same year, New York passes the Married Woman's Property Act, and for the first time, women aren't automatically liable for their husband's debts. They can enter contracts on their own. They can collect rents or receive an inheritance because, yeah, before, when they received an inheritance, it became their husband's and it never even went to them. And their husbands could do what they wanted to with it.
That's my money, Brohim.
No kidding. And she could file lawsuits on her own behalf. This, ladies and gentlemen, is when women became identified as individuals rather than merely a man's wife.
We're people.
1848.
That's when we became a humanoid.
Basically.
Hey.
We were sentient. So this is where Lou's mother would have been. And that was also, keep in mind, only New York. So the other states still had not necessarily passed those laws. And let's be honest, Alabama is not the quickest to pick up on these types of things. So it's unclear exactly how many rights her mom would have had at that time. Voting still wasn't a right that they were allowed to have either at this point.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that goes back and forth.
We're only there and we're in the 1800s. I will say it picks up speed real quick in the 1900s. 1870, the 15th Amendment is ratified, saying the right of citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of race, color, or previous condition of servitude, which is to say, African Americans may now vote, but women cannot. In 1872, Victoria Woodhull becomes the first woman to run for U.S. president. She received a few votes. I mean, women couldn't vote for her, so she ran, but...
Well, it's nice to know that there were a handful of men who, you know, were forward thinkers, I guess.
Or maybe it was just people that she knew. yeah. everybody that knew her, like, yeah.
Dad, I need you to vote for me. Like, it's like me trying to promote the podcast.
Oh my gosh, especially at the beginning. Guys, please listen.
Oh,
tell people
God.
About it.
Get past like 20 episodes and then it gets a little bit better. I swear.
Give us a chance. Yeah, don't go backwards because you're going to have to stop like at some point and just not go any further back. Don't start from the beginning or start from here and then go backwards. You'll just have to stop. 1890, Wyoming becomes the first state to grant women the right to vote in its state elections. 1900, by now, every state has passed legislation modeled after New York's Married Woman's Property Act, which was originally passed in 1848. So, folks, it took 52 years for the rest of the states to get on board. Granting married women some control over their property and earnings. 1918, Margaret Sanger wins her suit in New York to allow doctors to advise their married patients about birth control for health purposes. 1920, the 19th Amendment is ratified and grants women the right to vote. It declares the right of citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex. I don't know if you guys can hear these girls in the background, but they are really loud. But that's okay. That's fine. 1922, suffragette and activist Rebecca Felton is appointed the first woman U.S. senator. At 87 years old, and she serves for 2 days.
What? Did she die?
Yeah, I don't know. Because that 1922, that was old. I mean, that's old now. That was old back then. That was 100 years ago.
Okay. I just didn't know if it was like, she was
it
like...
It didn't say. I'm assuming like, she probably didn't die, but like I wonder if it was just kind of a publicity almost thing at that
maybe.
Point.
I wondered if she was like that bitch that opened her mouth during the Wilmington massacre. She served one day as a senator. Yeah.
Maybe. 1923, the National Women's Party proposes a constitutional amendment. Quote, men and women shall have equal rights throughout the United States and in every place subject to its jurisdiction. Congress shall have power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation, end quote. It didn't pass.
What's appropriate legislation? Who determines that?
Well, it's Congress has the power to enforce this article saying that men and women have equal rights. Is what
but it's
it
up
saying.
To the state too.
Yeah. Right? Well, it's they shall have equal rights throughout the United States and in every place subject to its jurisdiction, and Congress shall have the power to enforce this by appropriate legislation. So I think the idea was to try to limit what the states could prevent. As far as rights were concerned. But obviously it didn't pass. We're not going to do that.
Got some news for you. Still trying to do that 100 years later.
No kidding. 1932. Hattie Wyatt Carraway of Arkansas becomes the first woman elected to the U.S. Senate. 1933. Labor Secretary Frances Perkins is the first woman to serve on a presidential cabinet under Franklin D. Roosevelt. In 1934, Letty Pate Whitehead becomes the first American woman to serve as a director of a major corporation, the Coca-Cola Company. 1936, judicial approval of medicinal use of birth control is established. 1937, the U.S. Supreme Court upholds Washington State's minimum wage laws for women. So kind of like it was with the kids, women and children weren't required to earn a minimum wage. They could just kind of pay them whatever they wanted to up to that point.
Well, it may be a law now, but we're still fighting to be paid the same wages.
We're still struggling.
Yeah.
Big gap between this one and the next one. 1963, the Equal Pay Act is passed, promising equitable wages for the same work, regardless of race, color, religion, national origin, or sex of the worker. Equitable being debatable. 1964, the Civil Rights Act passes, prohibiting discrimination on the basis of race, color, religion, national origin, or sex. 1965, in Griswold v. Connecticut, the Supreme Court overturns one of the last state laws prohibiting the prescription or use of contraceptives by married couples. Key there. Married.
Okay.
1969, in Bowe v. Colgate, Palmolive, I guess is how you say that. It's been a while since I've seen that word. Company, the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals rules that women meeting the physical requirements can work jobs that had been for men only. 1969, Shirley Chisholm of New York becomes the first African-American woman in Congress. Her motto is unbought and unbossed. She serves in the U.S. House of Representatives for 14 years.
Nice.
1972, in Eisenstadt v. Baird, I guess, the Supreme Court rules that the right to privacy encompasses an unmarried person's right to use contraceptives.
Shocking.
So it took 7 years for an unmarried person to be able to use contraceptives.
Yeah, legally. Yeah.
Right. 1972, Catherine, it's just spelled interesting. Graham becomes the first woman to become CEO of a Fortune 500 company, which was the Washington Post.
What do you think her imposter syndrome was like?
Oh, I thought it was impressive.
Yikes.
She's like, I need two companies at the same time in order for me to feel like I've done something.
God.
1973, with its Roe v. Wade decision, the U.S. Supreme Court declares that the Constitution protects women's rights to terminate an early pregnancy, thus making abortion legal in the U.S. Sort of.
For a while.
1974, housing discrimination on the basis of sex and credit discrimination against women is outlawed by Congress. To clarify, housing discrimination on the basis of sex and credit discrimination against women are outlawed by Congress. That means people would not give housing to women or credit to women simply because they were women. Well, that wasn't allowed after that. 1974, that's not that long ago. The Women's Educational Equity Act funds the development of non-sexist teaching materials and model programs that encourage full educational opportunities for girls and women. 1974 also had the Equal Credit Opportunity Act pass. It does away with the practice of banks requiring single, widowed, or divorced women to bring a man along to co-sign any credit application.
Outside of my husband, I don't know any man with good enough credit to go.
I know, that's what I was thinking. Like,
what are you talking about?
I think it should have been the other way around, but that's fine. 1975, in Taylor v. Louisiana, the court denies states the right to exclude women from juries. 1975. This is just insane to me how recent some of this stuff has been. 1978, the Pregnancy Discrimination Act bans discrimination against women on the basis of pregnancy, childbirth, or related medical issues.
Okay, well, yes, but also at-will states can still do that and get by with it.
So at-will states can do that for anything. That's the point of at-will.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. It does not prevent them from being sued, though, if the reason that you were released was based on a discriminatory act and you can prove it, you can still sue.
Yeah, but still protected. I mean, they get around that crap by saying their performance wasn't up to par. But, you know, just some kind of like
work for that
standard
company anyway, to be perfectly honest.
It's just an asshole move, whatever.
1981, Sandra Day O'Connor was appointed as the first female U.S. Supreme Court justice. 1987, after being petitioned by the National Women's History Project, Congress designates March as Women's History Month. 1994, Congress adopts the Gender Equity in Education Act to train teachers in gender equality, promote math and science learning by girls, counsel pregnant teens, and prevent sexual harassment. It was also in that same year, the Violence Against Women Act funds services for victims of rape and domestic violence, allows women to seek civil rights remedies for gender-related crimes, provides training to increase police and court official sensitivity, sort of, and a national 24-hour hotline for battered women. 1997, Madeleine Albright is sworn into the U.S. Secretary of State. She's the first woman in this position. 2005, Condoleezza Rice becomes the first Black female Secretary of State. 2007, Nancy Pelosi becomes the first female Speaker of the House. 2009, Sonia Sotomayor becomes this. Sorry, I did copy this from that website, so that was bad verbiage. Sonia Sotomayor is the first Hispanic American and third woman to serve as a U.S. Supreme Court justice. 2013, the ban against women in military combat positions is removed. This overturned a 1994 Pentagon decision restricting women from combat roles. Same year, reauthorization of the Violence Against Women the Violence Against Women Act. The new bill extends coverage to women of Native American tribal lands who are attacked by non-tribal residents, as well as lesbians and immigrants.
Isn't Nancy Pelosi the one that did the tic-tac-toe win thing recently?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
You guys haven't seen that? When they're trying to pass that bill to ban TikTok, and she got up in front of Congress and was like, this isn't a ban on TikTok. It's tic-tac-toe win. And I was like, bitch, what are you talking about? Like, she got roasted. She's trying to be hip and young and like use. No, but what?
Neither of those things apply to her.
No. So, like, you know, it's a great achievement, but also let's not have geriatric people making decisions for us.
Yeah, just
please.
A general rule. Just general.
Sorry, that's my two cents.
No, I think many people agree. 2016, Hillary Clinton makes history when she secures the presidential nomination for the Democratic Party, becoming the first U.S. woman to lead the ticket of a major party. She did lose the election. 2017, well. 2017, a worldwide protest called the Women's March happens the day following Donald Trump's presidential inauguration. It was the largest single-day protest in U.S. history, with an estimated 4 million participating in local marches across the nation. The organizers' goal for the march was, quote, send a bold message to our new administration on their first day in office and to the world that women's rights are human rights, end quote.
I didn't join that protest because I stayed in my bed for like 2 days afterwards and cried.
That's fair.
I'm not dramatic at all.
No, not at all. Nobody would ever call you that. 2020, Kamala Harris is sworn in as the first woman and first woman of color vice president of the United States. She said, quote, while I may be the first woman in this office, I will not be the last, end quote. Oh, that gives me chills every single time. 2022, the Supreme Court rules that the Constitution does not confer any right to abortion, thus overruling both Roe v. Wade in 1973 and Planned Parenthood v. Casey in 1992 and setting off waves of protests across the U.S. And that's where we are today.
Well, and they've subsequently, state by state, been rolling back access to abortion care and bodily autonomy for people who identify as women and or have uteruses. Like, it didn't just stop there. It's continuing to get worse and worse. With that said, look into who you vote for coming up, because that's coming up.
A big one.
Remember, don't just vote based on the party that you believe in, because a lot of them are the ones who are putting this devastating stuff into play. So that's
don't vote just on what they say they support. Check and see what they actually do, not just what they say.
One of my favorite things recently has just been like roasting Jeff Jackson on TikTok. I don't know if you guys look at my TikTok, but
at TikTok, Montana. I'm old.
Yeah. He's a North Carolina senator, something like something in government. I don't fucking remember. He's a dipshit. But he won based on like getting a huge following on TikTok. So he, you know, he was very relatable. He'd be in his kid. He was like, I'm going to go to Washington and I'm going to let you know everything. And like he would have videos talking about like what's happening, all that stuff. So he was like very down to earth. And then he voted for the ban for TikTok. And then
is that not the definition of talking out of both sides of your mouth?
Yeah. And so like he's just getting fucking reamed on TikTok right now. And so I've just been going back to his older videos and just like stitching them and just just making an ass out of him.
True to form. True to form.
Sorry. I have better things to do than that, but like
sometimes you don't feel like it.
That makes me so mad.
So why talk about all these changes, right? That's not really what I'm talking about here. I'm talking about a woman that had quite a few accomplishments, I would say, in her lifetime. Well, it kind of makes sense as we move forward, and I wanted to provide perspective before moving on to the rest of the story, because I think we forget how recent some of our rights have been and how many women have gone before us and did amazing things without the rights that we have today. So it's important for us to look at that past and to realize what a big difference it actually is. In this situation, it also, I feel like it needs to be brought up because people judge people from 100 and 150 years ago, and they didn't have the rights that we had today. And so sometimes their decisions that they make with what they had, it's the best they could do.
I agree. And I just need you to know that I'm currently being judged.
Oh, I'm sure. You have dogs.
Yeah.
He's just, I have cats. I definitely know what that's like.
I sent you and Kelsey a Snapchat. He's just like sitting here staring at me. Like, and his tongue is out.
It's always out.
I know. It's because he lost his front teeth because he's been chewing on the fence. He's not stupid. He's trying to get into the neighbor's yard because our neighbors got dogs recently. Oh, so.
Okay. Lovely.
So, yeah.
He can't handle it.
Anyway.
So I say that to say Lou's mother remarried sometime before 1857 to John Williams, who then, according to Lou's autobiography, squandered what money the family had and abandoned them, forcing her second sister, Margaret, to leave home at the age of 14, where she started earning her living as a sex worker, which, of course, shamed the family name.
Leave it to a man.
Yeah. Not long after, Lou's mother died. Before her mother passed, she asked Lou to take care of her two youngest sisters, Julia and Cornelia. Unfortunately, the state did not acknowledge or respect her mother's wishes, and the girls were sent to Mobile's Protestant Orphan Asylum on March 16, 1857, the day after their mother's funeral.
Oh my God.
Lou's oldest sister, Frances, took her in, letting Lou live with her and her husband, Mr. Van Buren, in New Orleans, with another one of her older sisters named Jenny. But Lou couldn't give up on her two youngest sisters, and when Van Buren refused to help her to free her sisters of that place, she decided to take a ship by herself back to Mobile and wrote a letter forging Frances's handwriting, quote, claiming inability to retrieve the girls due to illness, and asked that they be received into Louise Wooster's care, end quote. Lou managed to free her sisters from the asylum on April 15th, 1857 by signing as Mrs. Van Buren on the release papers. She then refused to return to New Orleans, instead staying with a family friend named Robert A. Harris. This man is who Lou would later credit for her fall. From what I could tell, her two sisters did go to New Orleans to live with the Van Burens. This was just Lou living with him.
So this was like the OG forging your parents' signature on your report card.
Yeah, basically.
Nice.
But I kind of feel like it's a little justified this time because it got our sisters out of somewhere they shouldn't have ever been.
Yeah.
According to Lou's autobiography, she was 11, but according to the timeline, she would have been closer to 15. But regardless of either one of those, she was still a child when she was seduced by Harris. At some point, Van Buren found out that Lou was living with Harris and took her back to New Orleans, Van Buren being her sister's husband.
Yeah, her brother-in-law.
And brought her back to New Orleans, right, where she worked as a shop girl for a time, but ultimately left and lived briefly in Pascagoula, I guess.
Nailed it.
Sure. Before returning to Mobile to live with Harris again. That, my friends, is grooming.
Yeah.
let's just call it what it is.
100%.
Not long after, Harris abandoned Lou, and she was, quote, taken in by another male friend while she had yellow fever, who then left her in the care of prostitutes at a local brothel, end quote.
Was this Harris fellow, had she recently turned 23 and he played in popular movie called The Titanic at one point? Just
this was way before that, so no, I would say no.
Just clarification.
It was before the Titanic even happened.
I'd like to see his family tree. That's all I'm saying.
I don't think you would, honestly. Anyway, so she eventually moved to a brothel in Montgomery and became a sex worker herself rather than staying in Mobile and, quote, tarnishing the family name, end quote. She had several relationships that didn't pan out, including a lover she was living with that was killed from an infection a week after being shot in a fight. All I could tell is this was not during a war. This was probably just a fight that they got into, like in a alleyway or something. After this loss, she attempted and thankfully failed suicide. Let's just say many people would have suffered and possibly died had she been able to do what she tried to do. And on top of the fact that she actually helped save Birmingham itself. While living in Montgomery, she claims to have met... Okay, so here's where we're going to deviate a little bit, I'm pretty sure. She claims to have met and had a passionate relationship with none other than John Wilkes Booth during the first years of the Civil War.
Honey, what?
For those of you that may not remember, Booth was an actor by trade and was relatively well known. At the time, he was in Montgomery, starring in several stage roles, late October to early December of 1860. All that to say, the relationship is only found in her autobiography and was never confirmed by any other sources or ever mentioned. Not that it should be expected. I mean, let's play devil's advocate, as it's entirely possible that for him, it wasn't that big of a deal. It was just a passing fling while he was in town acting on the stage.
Yeah.
But there's no substantiation of this claim whatsoever.
I mean, girl, if you get it, you got it.
Maybe. According to OakHillBirmingham.org, aside from the account given in her autobiography, Wooster gave several known false statements to newspapers years later about where and how she and Booth met, creating a sensation with her conspiracy theory that another man, and not Booth, was killed by federal agents. Because he died, so she was saying he was still alive. She also claimed to have received an unsigned, undated letter from Booth several months after his supposed death. She was known to keep a scrapbook full of relics from and about Booth, which she showed to newspaper reporters in her later life, including a monogrammed handkerchief and several letters. It is not known whether these are her personal mementos or if they were fabricated for the reporters. It was during this time that Wooster claimed to have been inspired to be an actress, and when she and Booth's relationship broke off, she performed as an actress in Arkansas and New Orleans.
When you're talking about all of this, she reminds me of, Bob's Burgers, Linda's sister.
Oh, yeah. Kind of, yeah.
She's an actress.
Possibly, quite possibly. After suffering a brief bout of tuberculosis, so she's had yellow fever and tuberculosis. That's tough. She had to quit her stage career, and in 1869, she moved back to Mobile.
Was she actually an actress? Did that happen?
I have no idea.
Is that confirmed? Okay.
That was during a time period where there's not a lot of information that was able to be found.
Okay. Tuberculosis was like, it's still a problem today, by the way. And if you guys know John Green, the author who wrote mm-hmm. Turtles All the Way Down or whatever, Fault in Our Stars, whatever it is, I've never read any of those. But his TikTok is just him talking about tuberculosis. So I know a lot about tuberculosis, unfortunately.
Isn't that what that everybody would call, what is it? The illness that people would die, consumption? Isn't that what it was originally?
I think, yeah, I'm pretty sure that was consumption. But they used to have tuberculosis parties and things like that. It was very, like, people wanted to get tuberculosis because they would get it.
Oh, it was
like,
in vogue.
Yeah, because it would make you very thin.
Well, yeah, you were dying.
Yeah.
That'll do
it. It was not a good time.
There were also a lot of people that were isolated on islands for it because it was so catching. So, yeah, okay. Well, do what you will with that.
The more you know. If you want to know a lot about tuberculosis, go follow John Green on TikTok, I guess. Or don't.
That's what we got from that. Okay. Or don't. In 1873, there was a cholera epidemic in Birmingham. And just a few months prior, Lou had moved to Birmingham. According to her autobiography, the reason she moved just made sense. Quote, about this time, the great and growing Magic City was being incorporated. It was at that time a railroad crossing with a little town of about 20 or 30 houses and poor houses at that. The papers throughout the state were full of Birmingham, and very soon I became absorbed in it, and here I determined to cast my lot. End quote.
Birmingham back then, like, holy shit, man.
So little.
It was so little, but it was growing, and like, you can see a lot of the architecture today in Birmingham. A lot of it's crumbling, but...
Oh, I'm going to get into just a couple of things with her specifically, but I kind of go through the difference of when she was there compared to after this because of the timing.
Okay, yeah. Birmingham can be and is a beautiful city, so Also, and I just want to say this, since we are like we are talking about cholera outbreak, I just want to make it known that my first suggestion for our drink pairing was a mudslide. So that's my only input. Do with that. So if you want to go with a mudslide instead,
feel free. Anyway, when the epidemic hit soon after, and at least half of the population of nearly 3,000 people, fled in panic, Lou was one of several who stayed in the city to help the sick. While she knew that her reputation preceded her and had no idea how her help would be received, she stated she simply just couldn't leave the sick to their demise and had to do something. Her offer to help was readily accepted, with those still home and sick happily opening their doors to her to assist in their care, as well as dressing the dead for burial. She also claimed that during the time of the epidemic, she gave all of her money to those in need. Again, that's not something that we can substantiate. I'm sure she had to eat, so
yeah,
she kept some to herself, I'm sure. According to OakHillBirmingham.org, quote, in composing his official report of the disease's course in Birmingham, Mortimer Jordan Jr. did not mention Wooster by name. He did, however, include a paragraph praising, quote, the women of the town, end quote, for their magnanimous behavior and expressing the city's sympathy and gratitude for their selfless efforts. Though the epidemic subsided after several weeks, its effect, combined with a national financial panic, left Birmingham in a state of economic collapse. Wooster returned to Montgomery to pursue her trade for nearly a decade and returning to a resurging boomtown Birmingham in the 1880s. So for those of you that didn't listen to the Birmingham Axe Murders episode, because I know that was a lot of trigger warnings on that, so you may not have, I wanted to leave a quick note about the city of Birmingham to clarify kind of this timing. So it was founded in 1871 and had planned growth based on the fact that it was the only place worldwide where a significant amount of all three minerals can be found in close proximity that are required to make steel: iron ore, coal, and limestone. This growth was halted, and had those few that had stayed to help the sick, if they had left also, it easily could have decimated that growth by the cholera epidemic, but also the Wall Street crash in 1873. Shortly after these two incidents, Birmingham began to develop and grow at an explosive rate never before seen. And I mean, it just went nuts. And I go over that in the Birmingham Axe Murders episode at the beginning. So between 1873 and 1884, not much is really known about Wooster. It's known that she is listed in the 1880 Montgomery Directory as either operating a boarding house or a brothel. I mean, they called them boarding houses a lot. That included her youngest widowed sister, Cornelia, Cornelia's son, two, quote, lady boarders, and nine African-American servants. At the lack of knowledge about her life until she established her brothel in Birmingham in 1884, Wooster notes in her autobiography that she would like to drop the curtain for 5 years, presumably the 5 years between 76 and 81, as, quote, those 5 years of suffering are too dark for other eyes, end quote. She then goes on to vaguely mention her brutal treatment at the hands of men residing in Montgomery. As far as documented records
are... Wait, Montgomery?
Yeah, because she moved back to Montgomery.
Okay, okay.
Because Birmingham was devastated after the epidemic. As far as documented records are concerned, Wooster shows up again in 1881 in Birmingham City Records as having bought the first two plots at Oak Hill Cemetery, this being the first property she ever purchased in Birmingham, but then disappears again until 1884. In 1884, Miss Lou moved back to Birmingham and established a brothel at 1914 and 16 on 4th Avenue North.
What is that now?
By the way, Montana, in case you were wondering, that was the building familiar. Right beside the drive-thru and across the street from the hot dog
That's
place.
That's why it sounds familiar. Oh, my God. See it every day.
When I heard that address, I'm like, wait a freaking second. And I pulled it up on Google and it, yeah. So they used to have two buildings side by side and now it's a building and a parking lot. So they must have demolished the second building and kept one of them. And I think that building is the Forbes building now. So that building still stands. The other one's been demolished.
Is that the building that had the place where Jason and I would go get just like disgusting breakfast sandwiches in the morning?
Oh,
it's the.
I don't know. I never went there.
Mm.
I think it was always just businesses in that building. I don't know if they ever had food there. But there, and then there's the parking lot, and then next to that is that really big brick building that goes all the way to the corner.
I got you. I know which one you're talking about now, because I used to park in that parking lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you didn't get caught, it was fine.
Yeah.
Because that was a pay-to-park one. So yeah, so it used to be two-story buildings, but they must have torn down one for parking, as it currently looks a little bit different. But I just thought that was kind of crazy that we were so close to that building, and I never, ever heard any type of significance to that building whatsoever.
Yeah.
Anyway, her property was valued for tax purposes at $4,000. And in 1888, she purchased the building adjacent to her brothel for $12,000.
Good for her.
I mean, she's buying up the property. That was pretty smart and hard to do at that time. So yeah. I think she knew somebody that was helping her to do this. I think she got some power too with the work that she did.
Yeah.
And she used it. Until she retired in 1901, Lou lived with her sister Cornelia and her sickly nephew in one of the buildings she owned while operating the brothel in another one. Also, after several failed marriages, her sister Margaret, that I mentioned earlier, later owned a brothel a block over from Lou's on 3rd Avenue North under the name Maggie Bracken. The location was pivotal, as it was close to the police station, which provided her and her girls protection, and City Hall, which allowed them to be closer to potential clients who had deeper pocketbooks, so to speak. Her brothels, at the time, were known to be more high class.
Leave it to a sister to really try to outshine you in any field or anything.
I mean, any competition is good competition. Pushes you to do your best, right?
Yeah. So back then was, as we know, Birmingham now, North Side and South Side are two completely different things. North Side is like the business district and South Side is the more like breweries, like the...
And homes
and like, you know, more of like the lived in area. Was it the same back then?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, this was like the downtown area. So you had the police station, City Hall, all of that was right, which they still are right there.
Yeah.
They're only a few blocks away.
So hell yeah, like... They would do
but
well.
A lot of those buildings weren't there. I mean, the buildings that were there were much smaller than the ones there, obviously, now.
Yeah. So, of course, they would have done well right there. Men get off and, work. They go over there.
Exactly.
And then they go home.
To their wives.
To their wives. Tugger is judging us in the background.
I can see it with his goofy legs sitting out.
Yeah.
Lou was well known in Birmingham for her philanthropy and was even mentioned in the Birmingham Age newspaper for pledging $100 to a charity hospital campaign. She also paid to bury several of her sex workers who had no funds to be able to afford such a luxury, as well as some of their deceased infants, in the second plot that she had purchased at Oak Hill Cemetery. It's also mentioned in a few sources that she also paid to have some of her staff that would have been thrown into paupers' graves to be buried in her plot as well.
Oh.
And there were debates saying that she abused and took advantage of her girls. And, you know, there's no way of knowing whether that happened or not. But I find that hard to believe if she also buried them in a plot that she bought for herself.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
I mean,
that's the most respectful thing that she could have done for them is giving them a final resting place that she didn't have to do.
Yeah. But also, devil's advocate, because I like to do that. Two things can be true at once. You know,
true. Not mutually exclusive.
But yeah, I do find, I mean, same as you. I find it hard to believe that somebody who has that type of compassion and empathy would also turn around and abuse people.
And she obviously had something of a caring heart. She stayed in Birmingham during the cholera outbreak when she was risking her life in doing so to take care of the people that were left. And then she hightailed it out of there, but she did it after the people were recovering from it. She didn't do it during. And then she also was donating money. So I don't know.
And
again,
she
doesn't have to be mutually exclusive, but.
Yeah. And she worked so hard to get her siblings back. Like, I wouldn't have done that. Sorry, Mackenzie. Bye, bitch. Love you.
Mean it.
Especially if you're going to open a competing brothel right down the street from me.
Yeah.
What is your problem?
Maybe she encouraged her sister to do that because she wanted to be closer to her. It seemed like she was very close to her family.
Yeah, it does.
because she still lived with her one of her other sisters too, and her son. So who knows? About 6 years after she retired, Lou moved to a small house in Southside, which is why I said I think it was like the Southside, I think, was more residential. And then you had downtown. So Southside was just kind of the closest. And also one of the reasons why Birmingham grew so much is they actually started annexing a lot of the areas around them. So the location got bigger. Yeah. Okay. So that also makes sense too. So she did move to a small house in Southside, and then she rented her former downtown residence as well as the brothel to local businesses. So still keeping that money coming, even though she's retired from that side of the business.
Smart.
I'm telling you, like, she doesn't sound like she had a whole lot of education, but this woman was smart. She had business sense, and she knew how to make that money and keep it flowing. Yeah.
I wouldn't know what to do. Like, I would have been taken out by either TB or cholera, honestly.
And the thing, well, here's the thing, though. Think about it. She couldn't apply for credit, and businesses could have denied any loans to her on the fact of her just being a woman, because at that time, they weren't obligated to give her any property whatsoever. So she would have had to have been paying in cash of some kind in order to be able to do it. So that girl was saving up the money. As soon as she had that money, all right, I'm going to buy another one. Bring that money in.
You know, she does have a history of forging, like impersonating other people. So like,
maybe she got really good about that. She was practicing in her spare time.
What if that's really the story? Like, she,
that would be almost more amazing, to be perfectly honest. Like, the turns gall out she to just was... go into City Hall with all these guys, and they're not going to argue with her because they just saw her last week. Like,
yeah,
she just walks in with a piece of paper.
What if it comes out in a few years that she was actually a prominent man at the time, and everybody like she impersonated a man? That's the story.
I wouldn't
story
put
we
anything
need.
Past her. Let me just tell you.
Yeah, that's a story we deserve.
As I mentioned earlier, she wrote and published her autobiography, The Autobiography of a Magdalene. And Magdalene referring to Mary Magdalene, in 1911. Her book has had many people questioning the accuracy of the details provided, as there are some inconsistencies in dates and facts. But regardless, one thing is certain. She lived a full and crazy life, and she took care of those around her with a fierceness that you can't help but admire.
Yeah.
Lou died May 16th, 1913, from Bright's disease, which was a general term for degenerative kidney disease.
Oh.
According to those closest to Lou, she had started drinking heavily in her last years, which could have caused, or at least at the very least, exacerbated the issue. She was interred in Oak Hill Cemetery in the plot that she had purchased 32 years before her death. Despite being so well known, it would seem she was anyway, there are no pictures of Lou known to exist.
Oh, that's sad.
So we have no idea what she looks like, or her siblings, I think.
It's also sad for her to, like, use her entire life to, like, compassionately and, as far as we know, take care of other people and have such an impact, not just, like, on her community, but in the development and success of Birmingham. And then, obviously, like, she ends up becoming an alcoholic, which is can be a trauma response to shit that she's dealt with, literal shit that she's dealt with. And she didn't have the help for that. Wow. That's sad.
Yeah. And I did read an article that I did not include in here because I didn't use any information from it, because it kind of just rubbed me the wrong way. But I also understand them writing it. But the vibe I got from the article was, this woman wrote an autobiography and exaggerated a lot of claims, and we couldn't actually substantiate anything that she said. And she was a madam from Birmingham, and so she was rough and tough with everybody, especially those that worked under her, and like just made a lot of things. And it, as far as I could tell from anything that I read, and it is a lot of lore and legend as it comes from her. Because like I said, you got to remember the time of the time that we were in. She was a madam. So if you knew her, you weren't going to admit that you knew her or anything about her, because your wife's going to start shooting some looks at you.
Yeah.
So keeping all of that in mindset, I think, did she probably exaggerate some things? Yeah, sure. Why not? I mean, nobody else is writing about her.
Have you ever read an autobiography from a man?
Well, that's true.
Have you ever spoken to a man? Tell me that they don't do that all the time. I swear. It's 10 inches.
I don't think Kelsey's
face. She's like, I'm going to cut that. No, but I mean, who does it? You get taught like your entire life, and probably like not back then as a woman, but definitely today, and men did this back then. But when you're like trying to get a job or a promotion, or you're trying to do anything to succeed in life, you got to hype yourself up, man. Like, it's uncomfortable to do. I hate doing it. Like, this is all the great stuff that I do, and this is what I've achieved, and blah, 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 blah. But if you want to succeed in life, that's what you have to do. So she was successful.
And maybe she had a slightly unhealthy obsession with John Wilkes Booth.
Maybe. We all have our unhealthy obsessions about things.
Or hyperfixations.
Currently, you know, mine is... What is mine right now?
I lost track.
So sewing. Knitting, I guess. Yeah, knitting. I have like 3 sweaters that I'm knitting that...
None of them are finished?
One's almost completely done. I literally have like this much left on the sleeve, and I just put it down and started a new one. I require mental health assistance. No, but that's really a thing, actually. People call it sleeve island. So like once you get to the sleeve portion, it just gets really boring. And so like...
You don't finish it.
You don't finish. It's a real thing. I'm not the only one.
Get to the end. You can do it. A popular legend claimed that her funeral train consisted of several empty coaches sent anonymously from her admirers to honor her passing. However, this is more than likely false, as no newspaper mentioned such a scene, and one newspaper of the time noted that she was taken to her grave, quote, practically unescorted, end quote.
Aw.
Wooster continues to have local notoriety in the area. In 1971, she was the featured character in Beloved Valley, a historical drama written and performed for Birmingham's centennial celebration. The Wooster Lofts, the first loft development in Birmingham, was named in her honor. And in 2007, the UAB School of Public Health inaugurated the Wooster Award for Exemplary Service in Public Health. The inaugural winner was Alabama Representative Patricia Todd. There's also been an opera written about her life, Louise, the Story of a Magdalene, commissioned by Alabama Opera Works in 2000. The book by Sally M. Gale and score by Dorothy Heinemann won the Nancy Van de Vaart Composition Prize for Opera in 2004. And that, my dear listeners, is the amazing story of Lou Wooster, the Birmingham Madam that helped save the city that was still in its infancy so that it could become the remarkable city it is today.
Oh, that's so good. I love that. I like, and also, I appreciate you highlighting a sex worker in that. So, you know, because sex work is real work.
Well, it was actually very common that sex workers were the ones that were helping when you had epidemics like this, because nobody else would go to these houses, mm-hmm. but they were willing to do it because they knew those people needed care.
Yeah. It's pretty rad. So thank you for that. And I'll pour one out for Wooster. I'm not actually going to waste anything. I'm going to drink it.
Okay.
Sure.
Not today, though. I've had my fair share.
You can, well, you know, I just have a nice little gin and tonic. That's perfectly fine.
Mm, yeah.
Well, that'll work.
Cool deal. I bet she was a rad woman. I'd give anything.
I have
anything.
A feeling she was loud. And she Probably. Was just like, she was there and you knew it.
Yeah. I would like give my left tit to see what her closet looked like. Truly.
Oh, yeah.
Could you imagine? Or even like just to see those brothels or whatever, velvet mm-hmm. everywhere. Oh, man. Smelled like the
hers
inside.
Hers were supposed to be high end. So,
yeah.
Because she had high dollar clientele.
I bet it smelled like the inside of a cigarette pack. Oh, God.
Oh, yeah. You know, everybody was smelling.
So
Kelsey's much alcohol around there.
Yeah. Oh, what a fun time. I don't know what else to say.
You could say that. As long as you didn't get cholera.
Truly. I thought we were going to talk about shit more. But I guess listeners are probably happy that we didn't. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think anybody wanted to hear that.
Oh, God.
Kelsey's like, no.
Could you imagine like getting cholera back
I heard
then?
About it on the episode of This Podcast Will Kill You, and that was enough. It's pretty rough.
And you didn't really shower that often back then. Like, you didn't bathe as often back then. Just like people just covered in turds. Ugh.
Especially, you know, people that were poor, and that was the majority of the people in Birmingham, because it was all workers, basically.
True.
Up till This Podcast Will Kill You covering that, the only thing I knew about cholera was it had to be something like dysentery, because people would compare them, and you died a lot on the Oregon Trail with that, so it had to be bad.
I gotta be honest, until I heard that episode of This Podcast Will Kill You on cholera, I truly thought, I don't know what it was, I thought cholera was like a flu or something, like a cough thing, because it sounds
like croup.
Yeah, something, because it kind of sounds like that. And then I was like, oh, it's about shitting yourself to death. Oh God, this is way worse.
Sounds bad.
Yeah. Well, good job. This has been,
thank you.
This was a great closing for Women's History Month. But just as a reminder, it doesn't have to be Women's History Month to appreciate, lift up, and
celebrate.
Support women. Women helping women. So live like every month is Women's History Month. And that's all I got. Okay, until next time, we love you. We mean it.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye. The Reaper will come for us all.